This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Many people fashion themselves mavens of Texas history, but here's a newsflash. There's a whole bunch of history that happened in Texas before the Battle of the Alamo. The Spanish settlers don't get a lot of credit other than building those beautiful missions, but they did start the Texas ranching economy and establish these first towns like San Antonio and create the Camino Real and many of the areas that we know today. There's so much more that actually we don't know. That's what the Hispanic Heritage Center of Texas is working on collecting. They want to hear the stories of the original ranching families of Texas, and that's where you come in. Call in and tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980. Maybe you've got some papers or some artifacts from old relatives, ancestors who helped settle Texas. Maybe you can help settle what that history is. Joining us this half hour, Kay Hines, an archaeologist at the City of San Antonio's Office of Historic Preservation, and Rudy Rodriguez, the founder of the Hispanic Heritage Center of Texas. Welcome to The Source.
Viva Texas.
All right, viva Texas. All right, so Rudy, tell me about what it is that you're trying to do. What is the goal?
Well, the goal here, and you said it in your opening statement, the omission of Tejano history, Hispanic history throughout the state. Our role, we're a relatively new, if you might say, steward of Texas history. It's our watch today and from here on out to champion the history. We have examples. We were talking off air of things that are going on in our community. We want to ensure that we champion not only the legacy and heritage, but preserve and conserve our buildings, wonderful examples of legends and heroes that have not been championed in the past. That's our role in our era, if you will. It's an exciting opportunity for us to capture that part of Texas history that hasn't been talked about before.
Kay Hines with the City of San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation. What's the city doing with this?
Well, we're cooperating with Rudy's group. We're very excited about what the Hispanic Heritage Group is trying to do. I've been involved in the area for over 30 years, and it's just an area rich with history. And so we have been helping provide information from our office to Rudy's group, and we hope to continue to do that.
So I'm really not getting a clear picture of what it is that we're doing. Is there... with the Hispanic Heritage Center of Texas, you're working with different education institutions in here in San Antonio, like Palo Alto, Texas A&M, and you're trying to, what is it, capsule, capture, catalog, get the genealogy?
Of the above, but I guess we should say that and focus on currently this Legacy South project.
Yeah, that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah, and it's going to give us the example. I think that as you ask us some more questions, you'll find that, yes, we are trying to bring together groups, very knowledgeable and recognized groups like the City Preservation Office of History, the Texas Historical Commission, the Texas General Land Office, other historical associations, and bind them together in order to help us, the center, in our effort to champion historical, Hispanic, cultural, and history.
So this is one period that you're looking at, I guess, 1750 to 1850?
Correct.
Okay, and so what was Texas like during that time?
Well, during that time, I guess we should deviate just a little bit as a background. Mm-hmm. History, you know, tells us that New Spain, Nueva España, was created the Provincia de Texas in 1690 all the way through 1821 when the Republic of Mexico, of course, is created. And during that period, almost eight generations, if you will, of Tejanos built the roads and the towns and so forth. In this particular area, the mission ranches, and we talk about the Espada Mission, Missions Concepcion, they all had these very large ranches granted to them. And Mission Espada Ranch, for example, covered the area of study we're talking about or concentrating on from La Costa, Texas, and Medina County, eastward along the Medina River, all the way over to Elmendorf, Texas. So those mission ranches survived all the way to the late 1700s when the missions were desecularized. And once that happens, then land grants were available to the military, outstanding citizens, folks who wanted to start an effort in ranching, which obviously was a lot of Mustangs and Longhorns that the Spanish had brought into that area. So that begins to tell us of the area and what was going on before. At the beginning of desacralization is the beginning of La Medina, if you will, or our project begins during that period of time when the first land grants to, for example, one of your favorite subjects, of course, is Coronel Betis, Ignacio Betis, begins his first ranching efforts in Texas. Maybe you want to see.
Right. The rancho of Lieutenant Colonel Ignacio Betis is located along the Medina River, and it was one of several different ranches, large land grants. Colonel Betis was granted 4 leagues of land on the south bank of the river and 1 league on the north bank of the river. And so he had around 20,000 acres that he owned and controlled in this area of La Medina. And Ignacio Betis was ad interim Spanish governor of Texas. The family owned what is known as the Spanish Governor's Palace. At one time, he was very influential. As Rudy said, he was a military man. He was an outstanding citizen. And a large part of what remained of his ranch now can actually be seen in the Medina River Natural Area. We have some remaining structures that are related to the ranch that are there. And he acquired that property. We believe he began ranching there about 1793 after the secularization of the missions. There were a number of other ranches that that are very important in Texas history. The Ruiz family owned a large ranch there, and we can talk more about that, I'm sure. But
I know that there were families that were granted, you know, huge tracts of land to come to Texas and settle it when this was and. People wonder, you know, they hear their descendant, hey, my great-great-great-grandfather was a settler of Texas, and we got this land, and somehow we lost the land. And people want to know what happened. And many of the people who live in San Antonio, multi-generational natives, they know they're part of Texas history, but somehow they've lost what role their families had, and they want to find these things out. And we've got to take advantage of the technologies that we have now to make this information available, and then also have them help us fill in the gaps, because they may know a very colorful story about something that happened 100 years ago or 200 years ago, 300 years ago. The history here is deep and long and rich, and we need these people to step forward. So we're opening the phone lines. We definitely want to hear from our listeners. If this sounds familiar, give us a call. The number is 614-8980. This is definitely a crowdsourced effort. We've got to, because the history, the information has been scattered to the wind. We've got to reach out to everyone and collect it and unite it and inform each other about what happened here in this area so many years ago. This is The Source on KSTX. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You can email me at thesource@tpr.org, and we will be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the studio, Kay Hines, an archaeologist at the City of San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation, Rudy Rodriguez, the founder of the Hispanic Heritage Center of Texas, and they are working on the Legacy South Project, where they're trying to recapture the Tejano genesis. Who were the original settlers of Texas? We know some of the records, we know the names, but we're missing a lot of the stories. Now, I think these are the stories that exist out there in San Antonio. They've been passed down from family to family, generation to generation. But if we can get a dialogue going here, we could really put together an exciting history, a catalog of what life was like here before the settling of the Battle of the Alamo and all that stuff, because there's so much there. Isn't that right, Rudy? I mean, I know that you have a relative. Tell me about your Tejano relative.
Well, the Policarpio Rodriguez, of course, is a very famous Texas frontiersman, et cetera. But his dad, Jose Antonio Rodriguez, of course, bought one of the grants that were originally given to Luciano Navarro on the north bank of this area. It's clear to us in our family that marriages took place there, a society, a culture, religion was practiced, and everyone was a part of this ranching community. Indeed, it was there. Not only my family, of course, but Kay was talking about Coronel Francisco Ruiz, the Herreras. Blas Herrera was Paul Revere at the Alamo, for example. The Lasoyas were there, Toribio Lasoya's uncle, Domingo Lasoya. The Martinez families were there. All of them made this community, La Medina, a reality for them. It provided them with an opportunity to develop one of the first ranching economies in Texas. They harvested the Longhorns. They were able to round up the Mustangs. You talk about the cattle drives of the 1870s. Well, 100 years before, they were already rounding up these cattle and Mustangs and trailing them north, east, and south. It's a real important part that the families of the South Side are still there. There's a few that still own some of those tracts. But if you live on the South Side, I'm going to make this general statement. Chances are you still have connection to that Medina ranching society.
Right. I know that you talk about your history and you take great pride in your family or ancestors. I think when you learn something about your family history, you may not know it right now, but it changes you. You find out about who these people were, what they did, what they survived. You were informed by that about yourself. I mean, obviously, you have taken and you evangelize that. People need to know their family history. Isn't that right, Rudy?
It's a profound impact on your life, and I think that's the nature of our overall the end game is to be able to know that a little boy or girl that hears this information for the first time is imbued with the spirit of we were part of that. We were part of Texas history, just like Davy Crockett, Travis, and Bowie. I'm a Seguin, I'm a Navarro, I'm a Rodriguez. And I think it's so clear and important that impacts us at a very early age. Even as an adult, I think that we all see the improvement in spirit and identity and pride in our community. And ultimately, it just makes our society much stronger.
So Kay Hind, over at the San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation, tell me more about the role that y'all are playing in trying to move this forward.
Well, one of the things we've most recently done is Rudy is having some various events, and so we have been working with the San Antonio Conservation Society for about 10 years now in documenting the vernacular 19th century farm and ranch complexes. So one of the things we just recently did was to provide a lot of the information that we have on some of the 19th century vernacular farm and ranch complexes. And some of those consist of jacals. This is the largest concentration of jacals remaining in the entire city, county, and ETJ.
The largest concentration of what?
Of jacals, wattle, and daub structures. Those were the types of structures that were built by the Spanish and the Tejano settlers in the area. For example, Blas Herrera's house is still standing.
So these are the simple house structures. Made from stucco or something?
Well, they're wattle and daub, so they're upright vertical wooden post with horizontal lathing then that is chinked with mud and adobe and stone. And so we have a large concentration of them there, which is incredibly exciting to us. And so we've been helping provide some of that type of information that we have accumulated, as well as working on some of the early routes. This is probably the area that has the most number of Spanish colonial early routes of exploration, trade, and commerce comes through this area, through the Legacy South.
We're going to be highlighting that, of course, at our luncheon that's coming up, in fact, tomorrow. And we have a preliminary exhibit of exactly what Kay's talking about, the first architectural, Tejano architectural vernacular she's talking about earlier, not only the jacales, as they were called in Spanish, but also there was casas de sillar, made out of stone, if you will. But we'll be showing all of that tomorrow. There's a preview from 10 to 11 down at the Briscoe Museum. It's free and open to the public, and one can come in there and also see artifacts. There's also an exhibit where you'll be able to see a lot of what we've been talking about. So you could have a visual of a lot of what we're talking about.
Okay, I'm going to get some caller on the line. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Armando is called in. Armando, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's great to hear how, you know, the Hispanic and Latino experience is going to get written into history where it needs to be. And I was just curious, and this is something I've always wondered, when it comes to the Spanish chronicles or Spanish documented history, what do we know in terms of what we can glean on there and learn as far as what the experience was during that area for Hispanics here?
You mean like daily life?
Exactly.
Okay, Armando, thank you for calling in. I think Rudy can handle that.
I think that Armando was asking, how does that impact all the records we have? Or?
Well, I think he's saying, what was life like? How did people? What did people do? Where did they live? How did they survive?
I think that number one, I would draw a picture of all of and I'm going to date myself, all the Roy Rogers movies that I saw, or all the Lone Ranger movies, and the period epic documentaries we've seen about pioneering life and frontier life, the wagons moving, communities being built, and farming and ranching and so forth. And I think that's so foreign for Hispanics because we've always been what I call there's been this commission of omission where we're not pictured in that. And so it's a daily frontier life and struggle in the 1800s or 1700s. You've got to live on a water source. In this case, we're focusing on the Medina River. Ample wildlife to supply yourself with food as well, and growing plants and water to grow some farming products. It was a struggle.
It was a heroic struggle.
It's a heroic struggle. The Hanos. When we talk about the state as being independent and we're big on this and we're big on that, tall trees and long rivers, the Hanos were self-reliant. They had to, government was so far away from them that they had to make laws that they could interpret at the moment. They had to rely on their compadre, the neighboring rancher, to help them if they were attacked from hostile Indians or they were going to do hot pursuits. If there was society and culture to retain or the religion to practice, they all had to come together. And they were part of a force of life that really sustained them into generation.
Let's get Rogelio on the line. He's called in. Rogelio, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share with you my uncle, Francisco Garcia Esparza, shared with me the family history. Actually, Gregorio Esparza, who died in defending the Alamo, his brother Jose Esparza took sides with Santana. And the reason for that, they were trying to see, well, depending who wins, just to keep the family property, so the family land. Now, after the battle, the bodies were burned, but Santana allowed Jose to take his brother Gregorio out to bury him in the family plot. So I'm left wondering where that area might be, or, you know, somewhere in the 600 San Antonio. So that's something I just wanted to share with you all.
Rogelio, thanks for calling in and telling us that story. That's a pretty romantic story. I mean, you know, family, brothers against each brothers, and saving being able to recapture his brother's corpse and then interm him properly. So thank you for that. And so, Rudy, you know where that is?
Yeah. Elena Ayala did a piece in Expressing News a couple of weeks back on the Dia de los Muertos. And there, his body was interred into the old Campo Santo, which is now Milam Park. And there is a markers over there that mark Gregorio's place of burial. Obviously, Milam Park doesn't have any headstones anymore or anything like that. But on the eastern part, this gentleman can go and see his great ancestors' name marked on a very special plaque that has been commemorated back from 1859, where the last burials took place in that cemetery, the Campo Santo. But more importantly, about Gregorio Esparza and his three sons, Miguel, Francisco, and Enrique, ended up in the La Medina area in Atascosa County. They received land grants on the strength of their dad's tremendous sacrifice into the freedom of Texas, and they end up being romantically related and socially related, if you will, with the many families from La Medina, as we call it, in that South Bear County, Atascosa, Wilson County area.
Okay, time for one more quick phone call. Sandra, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Sandra.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love this conversation. Thank you for having it. And I was wondering if your guests could speak to the history of the system of peonage that many of these ranch systems depended on, because there seems to be this sort of discussion about Tejanos, like we all had the same voice and the same power to make law. So where's the system of peonage in this conversation?
Okay, we've got about a minute to hit that, but can you talk about that, Rudy?
No, I really can't. Kay, can you?
No, not a whole lot. I know that there were some cases of through the archival record of various individuals who did at one time have some Native American workers that were with them. Otherwise, I don't have a lot of information.
Let me get Sandra back. Sandra, are you there?
Yeah.
So tell me, just real quickly, tell me what you know about the peonage.
Sure. Well, you know, and let me, because I know we're running a little on time, but let me just make this statement, because earlier there was a comment made about how many residents of the South Side were probably connected to this Medina Ranch. But I think we need to ask how they're connected, because if we look at this legacy of poverty that we connect to the South Side, more than likely they're connected through this system of peonage.
That's interesting. That's fascinating. We've got to do more on this. There's so much here that needs to be told. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We're run out of time, but so Rudy, tell me more about how people can follow up. Maybe someone's listening; they've got something to tell. How they can hold of you?
Well, they can certainly come to www.HispanicHeritageCenterofTexas.org. They can give us a call. They can also come tomorrow to our luncheon.
Is that the Briscoe Museum?
Yes, the Briscoe Museum tomorrow.
Okay, also Kay Hines with the City of San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation. Thank you for being here. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back with the news.